Time now to catch up with CNN's John Defterios. He's in Bangkok. Thanks for joining us, John. Good evening.
Nice to talk to you from here.
Plenty to chat about this evening. Let's start with the ongoing saga of that health care bill in the United States. Republican lawmakers, of course, left scrambling somewhat to salvage their campaign promise to repeal and replace Obamacare after their latest attempt sank in the Senate. Where does this leave things now?
Well, you know, the structure of the U.S. Legislative system is that you had a House bill that was drafted up by Paul Ryan. It went over to the Senate. I knew there were differences. This is not something that the Trump administration wanted to admit to. There were differences from the very beginning. And then they have to try to find a compromise to take it to committee between the House members and the Senate members. It just didn't even emerge out of the Senate. So for Claire, this is quite a setback because it didn't go to committee after all. The senators didn't want to repeal it. It was not popular to repeal it. And the challenge, I think, for Donald Trump is that the first 100 days are gone. We're nearly in month 7 here of his administration, and he can't point to a major victory yet. Healthcare is a pretty tricky one. I looked at different estimates from the Congressional Budget Office, ranging from 22 million to 37 million people who would lose all sorts of healthcare. So it's very hard for somebody who's up for election, even on a six-year cycle like a senator, to say, I support this. So Donald Trump immediately came out and said, well, we're not going to support Obamacare anyway, even if it didn't clear the Senate, which is really kind of bucking against the U.S. congressional system and the will of the people. So it's not helping his approval ratings at all, which are below 40%. And he doesn't have a score on the legislative side, which he can take and say, I've done this. It struck out on this occasion, and it was a big one. It was a big loss for him.
And, that, you know, they're in limbo on that one, and it's obviously taking up a lot of time and energy in Washington. What does the U.S. business community want the president to be focusing on instead?
Well, I'm glad you asked the question, because I thought we had a quite outlandish, forward, direct opinion from one of the lead bankers in the United States, Jamie Dimon, the chief executive of J.P. Morgan Chase. And on his conference call, he said, I don't think we need to worry about our short-term failure of our bond trading division, because he produced phenomenally good growth in the quarter of, I think, 13%, if my memory serves me correctly. But at the same time, he says, you know, we're not riding this momentum of reform, legislative reform that the president had promised. So if you're going to take on reform, whether it's trade and killing off the TPP or reworking NAFTA, which is on the table, but let's just focus on what they're looking for. That was your question. They're saying we need tax reform. The corporate tax rate is very high, something that Donald Trump campaigned on. He said we need to restructure it. We need a tax code that's much fairer, much simpler. That would be an easy win for him, to be candid. I don't think anybody's going to argue the fact that our upper-end corporate tax rate, which is surprising even to me as an American to see it so high, doesn't need to be reformed. I think strategically, the president would have been much better starting there. And to have a leader of that caliber and that kind of power as a banker, who was offered the Treasury Secretary position anyway, to basically be the, you know, the finance minister of the United States, who says now he's embarrassed to go overseas and listen to the comments of the U.S. president directed at him, saying, why aren't we moving faster and doing better, and why do we see some big wins? For example, we're not having, Claire, the conversation about infrastructure. That was supposed to be his focus. So, of course, Jamie Dimon, for one, of J.P. Morgan Chase, said, let's focus on infrastructure. Let's focus on tax reform. Let's stay away from controversy and actually taking health care away from people, because that's a sore point in the United States. Health care costs are too expensive. So we're not bringing down the cost of health care. This would take, you know, 30 million plus out of the system entirely and actually into costing the government probably a lot more money in the long run.
Steering clear of controversy is not something that the president has done so far, is it? You mentioned in there, John, the NAFTA agreement. Any developments on that? Is it looking like it will survive?
Well, it's interesting. Instead of tearing it up, the conversation now is reworking NAFTA, the North America Free Trade Agreement, which has been in, you know, for better than 20 years. He struck Donald Trump at Canada on a few issues like softwood lumber. Softwood lumber has come back off and on through the decades. But his biggest concern is, you know, south of the border in Mexico, cheaper goods, lower cost labor, taking jobs away from America. But he says he wants to rework it. Talks about still building the wall, even a solar panel wall that would kind of serve the energy needs and protect, obviously, the wall and light it up. I don't see it as an easy score. I think there's, and I'm sounding really negative, I don't mean to, but if you start to backtrack on free trade agreements, there's that hint of protectionism, and that's a very slippery slope. And I think what we learned out of the last G20 that took place in Hamburg when the U.S. was isolated, 19-1, and they said they wanted to try to continue the multilateral process for trade in the World Trade Organization, it was kind of a shot against the United States, and we don't want to follow this path to protectionism. And you notice that the U.S. dollar has been going down, Claire. It's also a signal that they're not really confident that the process can go through, so expect slower growth. But I also think that they're worried about protectionist measures surfing. So that's a big issue going forward and why they have those sort of concerns about reworking NAFTA, not tearing it up, but reworking it. It's still difficult because you have an agreement that's been signed. You have to go in, rework it, and get your partners to agree to it, which is not an easy thing to do as well.
Elsewhere, if we're talking economics, and I think you mentioned the dollar there, I think it's at a four-month low, isn't it?
It is, and this is the danger, because they're worried about growth being sustained. That's the issue regarding the U.S. dollar. We don't know where the U.S. is going on interest rates right now because of the slower potential growth. If interest rates stay lower, that'll undermine the dollar, because we think that trend of higher interest rates may be in a pause 6 months, 8 months, perhaps even a year, if the growth and the reforms are not materialized from the White House. We have these expectations of reforms taking place. That's the reason why.
Let's quickly get your thoughts on OPEC and Ecuador dealing a blow there, because it's announced it's going to start raising oil production this month, which is sort of against the agreement there.
Yeah, in fact, it's a small producer, Claire. It's amazing that a small producer would cause so much trouble within OPEC itself. They had a conversation between the Saudi oil minister, Khaled Al-Faleh, who was interviewed and know well. They're trying to keep the Humpty Dumpty, if you will, glued together, all the members still on board for the agreement. But it's hard for an Ecuador or Venezuela or Nigeria, which is not party to the agreement, or if you take a case like other countries like Angola, to say we want to go along with the agreement. We see the shale output going up in the United States. U.S. producing nearly 9.3 million barrels a day, and they're not getting higher revenues for it. So this is a difficult argument to make, although demand figures that we're seeing from the IEA and others are rising probably to 1.5 million barrels a day of growth. That's a positive, but these countries that are hurting have a hard time cutting production, selling that to the people, and not see prices above $50 a barrel. This is a quandary for the OPEC, non-OPEC agreement. You know, they're going to gather July 24th in St. Petersburg, the monitoring committee. They have the Nigerians and the Libyans attending this meeting as well. That's going to be a challenge to keep everybody glued together. The Russian minister told me in Istanbul last week, Alexander Novak, they're open to new ideas to go back to the bargaining table and try to make it work once again. If they need to do more, they need a monitor to see where we are. But if you don't come out with very clear signals, the market will punish those signatories to the agreement, as you know.
Yeah, absolutely. We're nearly out of time, John, as usual. We always chat on this show. But you're in Bangkok. You're on the road for your CNN segment, One Square Meter. Tell us how it's going there and what's the mood there?
Well, I was surprised. We're not seeing rapid growth in Thailand right now, but there's money around. And I mean money within the country of, 65 million people. They see themselves as a gateway to Southeast Asia and the link to China, by the way. They see themselves right at the center of it. And I was in one facility today called 98 Wireless. Extraordinary. Incredibly good quality. Sort of the quality that we see emerging out of Dubai and Abu Dhabi in terms of quality of the development itself. We're looking at flats. Claire, this is the highest end of Bangkok. So it's worth seeing the quality they put on the table. Ralph Lauren design. Really beautiful architecture. Beaux-Arts in terms of the style. $2 million on the bottom end. $5.5, $6 million at the top end. 150 to 300 square meters. It's not cheap stuff, so you kind of wonder where that wealth is coming from. 20% of it's going to go to foreign buyers, China, Japan, Singapore investors, Malaysian investors, Indonesian investors, but 80% of it right here in Malaysia. So even though there's not hugely strong growth, there's money locally, and they see potential as being this gateway to a bigger market of, you know, of ASEAN, better than 600 million consumers. If they can serve that role as a gateway, they think more investment is going to come in, and they can grow faster. 20 years, as you suggested, since the financial crisis, they learned that lesson. I don't hear any bubbles bursting yet. They're trying to manage the real estate market sensibly, and the growth is decent. They need to get that investment up to make sure that the manufacturing sector grows along with the tourism sector as well.
Sounds like an interesting place to be. Enjoy the rest of your trip, John. Thanks as ever for talking to us this evening.
You take care. Thanks for your catching me on the road before I get on the plane.
No worries. Safe travels, John. That's John Defterios there joining us here on Drive Live.